Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. Now, it's Wednesday today, but nevertheless, Edwin, who wasn't around on Monday, is back for his Monday Evening Property Rant on a Wednesday. Hi, Edwin, how are you doing?
I'm on the mend, Martin, on the mend. Plenty of turmeric, ginger, honey, lemon juice, and yeah, I just got to be careful not to turn orange.
I was going to say, I'll turn the colours down a bit. But it's good to see you back. And I made a brief show on Monday because I did a bit of research already for the Monday show. But things have moved on, so plenty to talk about. We are in an interesting time. Of course, we've got the Trump story bubbling away with the tariffs. China announced the growth target for next year at 5%, and I think 4% a bit later. And they're announced more stimulus over in China. And although he hasn't gone to the election yet, and I noticed that the headlines were saying that because of, is it Alfred the Storm? It's going to be kicked back. This storm is no mean feat, actually. I am quite concerned about the amount of rain they're forecasting, south of Brisbane in particular. And, of course, we know that northern New South Wales had those floods 3 years ago, and that was pretty devastating. So much to talk about, though. I guess, we should pick the story up with Albo and what he's saying.
Yeah, I don't know which one's more devastating, Albo or Alfred. But, yeah, look, our best wishes and heart and our prayers go out to our fellow Queenslanders that are going through all this. Look, there's going to be a lot more to come because that's the way they want to play it in terms of who knows who's controlling a lot of these things. Call it what you will, but there's a greater forces at play. And that's what the WeChat chatterers have been saying also for quite a number of years, all these machines and all these anomalies happening all around the world. And are they natural events or are they man-made events? But regardless of that, all we know is that we've got the WeChat chatter force, or let's say the CCP force, the Chinese Navy circling Australia. But in the meantime, Albo's has got a plan. He has got a plan, Martin. And the plan is, if you have a young population that's angry with you, that's very vocal, and you can't house them, well, the question is, Bat Martin, what do you do?
Yes, that's a very penetrating question on all sorts of levels. And, I don't know whether you noticed, but we had some data on the national accounts today. Mm. And one of the most fascinating things about that data was that the GDP was showing that productivity fell, limiting how much wages can rise without causing inflation. The GDP prices rose 1% quarter and 2% year over year. And the household savings ratio rose. But if you look below the hood, the truth is that the public demand, which is all, of course, the government spending stuff, has been rocketing higher. It's much, much higher than was actually forecast in the RBA modelling ahead of time. You can see there on that line. And another way of looking at it, this is the contribution to year-end growth. And you can see there that it's all about the government. It's all about what they're spending. And as a result of that, as Chris Richardson put it, the don't release specifically the living standards data, but the disposable income per head adjusted for inflation went up by 0.09% in the December quarter, and they're down 9.9% from their artificial COVID high of September 2021. So you can see there that the reality is that without government spending big, massively big, we would have been in a recession. But this is not good because it really doesn't set up the economy well for the future. And I guess my perspective on all of this is that the story of what's going on, economically speaking, versus what's being spun, economically speaking, is for me one of the really big, elements that's worth thinking about a bit further. Now, okay, the inflation has come back a bit, and the most recent information from the Melbourne Institute did actually show that inflation has dropped back a little, and therefore there is perhaps the possibility of rate cuts coming a little bit, but not a lot during the year. But of course, people are so leveraged up, so it makes a big and significant factor that's really driving a lot of the issues at the moment. And I have to tell you that the other thing, right, going right back to the defense thing, did you see this? This is actually what the Chinese are reporting about the ships going around Australia. And I saw this from Fred Paul, who said, if you live on the Australian coastline, do your bit for defence by keeping an eye out for Chinese naval ships. Call Defence Minister Richard Marles. I just want to highlight the fact that we've been part of a group sailing around the oceans, in and around the Chinese area for quite some time, and now they're doing it to us. So there's a funny story here, which is not funny. It's quite serious, but the way it's being spun is quite concerning. And that is my sort of general takeaway from all of this. Wherever you look, economically speaking, there's spin going on. If you look at what's happening with regard to the ships, horror, horror, they're actually sailing around the edge. And then this other one here, right? So Labour was actually forced to concede that their flagship Housing Australia Future Fund has not built a single home in the 2 years since it was announced. Guess what? They are buying existing properties to try and actually say they've got houses happening under the fund. So spin, 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 a million miles from the reality. And for me, this is the real big problem with the political narrative in Australia at the moment.
Yeah, look, the thing is, Martin, this is a page out of your typical playbook when the nation is in trouble, when the people are starting to rise up, when voices that weren't heard are starting to come out and want to be heard. So in other words, when there's a lot of noise, the typical playbook where you see from a lot of the communist countries is let's start a war with somebody, right? Let's create a distraction. And sadly, this is where we are. This is it's not only Australia. It's a lot of countries around the world and go through that. Look, I sort of you could say I grew up with this in a way because a lot of my family, back in South America, are very much into politics. They dwelt real deep into politics. Became leaders of socialist communist parties. I mean, when I was a youngster, I mean, I was all in for Che Guevara as well. And it's all part of the indoctrination of growing up. Part of growing up. But the playbook is the same over and over again. Let's distract the people with something. If it's not building a coliseum to watch other people kill themselves, it's let's send the young people to go kill themselves because let's send them somewhere, let's do away with it. And it sadly, whether it eventuates or whether it doesn't eventuate is not the issue for our property rate. What the issue is, as I keep on saying over and over again, is the emotional effect that it has on whether people are going to list a property for sale, on whether people are going to be more inclined to buy, whether people are going to, it's that emotion around the fear of missing out. It's that whole emotion around should I selling now because of panic that's been created. And in a way, when you take that into consideration and you take into okay, let's say what's happening globally as well, you look at what people are going to be doing and thinking and panicking. Like I'm not saying that we're going to go and get we're WW3 is going to eventuate. I'm not saying that at all, but it's the what ifs that people are feeling, and people will act Some will act rationally, some others will act irrationally, but whichever camp they sit in, what we go back to is the fundamental principle that Australia, by far and large, is a safe haven. And whilst there is a global fear of an escalation of a hot war in Europe, you can bet your bottom, you can bet your bottom dollar that we are going to get more money inflows and more expats and more people that have held that have got PR have held PR here and gone back to Europe for whatever we are one reason or another, and they've been sitting there and they've created a lot of wealth. And now that money is going to come back to Australia, where if I can say, extrapolate the truth a little bit, where their dollar is going to buy two of our dollars, and therefore $1 million home or a $2 million home or a $3 million home or a $4 million home becomes very cheap. For not only from a monetary point of view, but it sort of becomes very appealing from a safety, security, and somewhat stability point of view, because these are people that are coming in cashed up. They're not going to the bank. They're not going to CBA. They're not going to ANZ and St. George and saying, "Hey, can I borrow 95%?" I mean, they're coming in with a worst case scenario with a 40% LVR, 50% LVR. In most cases, they're coming in with cash in hand. And why? Because as you point out, our economy is going backwards. It has been for a number of years. Money from overseas is buying a lot more of Australian of Australia in the sense of when you're doing the foreign exchange, and therefore, as I said, it becomes cheap. So when you've got this large amounts of money coming in because of fear and panic that is happening over abroad, you've got you you've we've got a game on our hands. And then when we've got, as I've been saying, in the previous podcast when we started talking about the election, or when we'll have a call the election, as I was saying, my call is that the seasonally we're 6 to 8 weeks away from winter, and therefore there's going to be a retraction in volumes of properties for sale, but by seasonally. One, and the second thing is that we're going to have a retraction in numbers because of the uncertainty around the election. And this is what we are already seeing happening, hence the reason why we have also put that post out of what the auction auction clearance price that we've actually the median hit above the 2 million, 2 million and 50 something dollars. It's incredible, given the fact that many were calling a downturn, a downward trend. Many were calling this, that. The Tom Panelist Index were calling, there's going to be a lot more properties on the market. Panic, panic, panic. But this is where we are right now.
Yeah, it is interesting, and there's a couple of very important points I think to make here. We've always said, and in fact, those following the rant, is you can't really just take the top level headline, index move of property. And of course, CoreLogic did actually say that the February result was slightly higher than January. Now, the February result would include, well, transactions from some time back. So it's not right up to date. We always believed, I think, that there were areas of the market that were relatively hot for the reasons we've discussed. And that includes, of course, the people who have cash from the equity and property they've already got, and also people coming into the country with cash. That's the first point. The second point is that the story about the uncertainty that I'm seeing at the moment, I get that quite a lot in my one-to-one conversations. There's a lot of uncertainty from people saying, well, I'm not really sure what I should be doing because, our price has gone up. Is this the top? Is it going to come down? Or is this a leg up or a further leg up? In other words, we're going to see more momentum later. And that's part of the confusion, I guess, for many people as to which way this is going to play out. And it's hard to know, really, given the fact that if you look at the data, you can make it read one way or you can make it read the other way. The CoreLogic story was pretty much that Melbourne in particular is now coming out from a 10-month streak up slightly. Quote, it's quite a sudden turnaround from the downturn that was accelerating, said Tim from CoreLogic. But of course, then you've got Sydney dwellings are sitting at 10 times higher than income, and households are spending in some cases 6 times their income to service new mortgages, and it will take them 13 years to save. So this is not a simple story. And it's interesting whether you saw this, Matt Comyn came out and said high house prices are an ongoing concern. So he's, of course, the CEO of Commonwealth Bank, and it's a challenge for people, which of course is their part of the problem because they've been lending big. So we are in this weird situation where, depending on how you look at it, you could argue that we are in a situation where prices, are way over the top, and yet people are still committing to buy. The average price of some of the ones that you mentioned in that earlier post, 2 million. So people are actually committing 2 million on a house. And I don't know what you think, but I think there'll be areas where prices will continue to rise. And particularly in the high demand areas, particularly standalone properties. And it's interesting that CoreLogic mentioned that some of the upward movements that they've been seeing were in the more expensive end of the market. So this isn't the $1 million end of the market. It's the other end of the market. So this is a complex picture. And again, I come back to, you cannot read anything from these high-level indices up 0.2 or down 0.2, right? And yet the media goes town every time this data comes out. And to my mind, it's more deceptive than anything else.
Yeah, look, the old saying goes, right? A rising tide lifts all boats. And so it's not just the top end that's rising. It's actually the bottom end. And that is why we've also been charting. And from time to time, we've been talking about the fact that very soon we're not going to have any homes, any freestanding homes for sale in the Sydney region, according to Domain, under $1 million. I'm of the opinion, as I've said before, that out of the 1,100 or so freestanding homes that are advertised on Domain, I dare say that a good 50% of those are underquoted, and are made up of underquoted properties, and also made up of not real. The agents have a habit of doing that. It's one of those things, one of those habits that they get into, that they'll put the description of an apartment or a townhouse as a house in order to attract more attention, more views, so it's misrepresentation and underquoting, bait advertising. So if you look at those figures, Martin, you're going to see that 500 or so, freestanding homes are under $1 million in Sydney. So this is where we are at the moment. But there are reasons why we are here. There are reasons why these are the only ones available. There are reasons why the top end has kicked up picked up a step again, and those median values for the auction results on the weekends, those median values are effectively trending upwards, and trending upwards very quickly because of the confidence and the people wanting to get into those areas. So when you look at the areas that they're wanting to get into, let's say the $2 million plus areas, these are areas that not too long ago they were sitting at 1.5. I mean, when you got areas such as King's Langley, for example, and I know I bang on about Blacktown a lot of times because you see a lot happening there. When you could buy a property in Blacktown, for 1.3 12 months ago, or that was the entry level, and but now they're almost fetching 2 million, 1.7, 1.8, 1.9 million dollar sales in King's Langley. But then when you go closer to the CBD, obviously Yeah, you've got a lot of areas that have also jumped astronomically over the last few years, because again, because of the demand and the supply has not so much dwindled, but the demand has increased by, as we've discussed, the many issues that have created this housing crisis that we're in, and one of the primary issues being immigration. But the trend, as you say, it's got to be looked at from an individual suburb, an individual area, an individual street, type of property, type of dwelling, and and how it's how it's presented. So there's a lot of variables that make up the a market. But in general terms, Martin, the simple fact is, and I know I bang on about this a lot. And that is that we're not a very big market in comparison to the rest of the world. And the eyes of the rest of the world are on Australia. So, we can we can bash the government as much as we want. We can say this or say that. Look, at the end of the day, the circumstances globally and locally, which we'll talk a bit more about later on as to who's coming into the market, the circumstances globally and locally are such that there's greater demand than there is really supply, because the numbers in comparison to the to when you compare supply to demand, it's they're two worlds apart in many many markets of Sydney. And yes, I wholly agree with you that there are markets in Sydney that are still going to fly, and I put that in the prediction for 2025 in early January. We're still going to see another 5 to 7%, 10% rises in many parts of Sydney, of the Sydney markets, in particular around freestanding homes, because that is the desired dwelling. Everything else is, I shouldn't say everything else, but everything else other than a house, a duplex, a townhouse, a villa, is pretty much, let's not go there. Although there isn't a huge uptick in your old, 70 style apartments because of the low cost and because of the low volumes of of families that live in a block. So the apartments, on the other hand, which is where the government wants to corral the next generation, where the government wants to corral most of the population, by that, even by that town that you mentioned down in in Wollongong, where they want to raise, four or five towers or something in the middle of nowhere. I mean, that's insanity. That's the government's logical solution to the problem that they've created.
Yeah, well, this is Warrawong, which is down near Port Kembla, and it's an interesting story here because they're talking potentially of putting five or six new high-rise buildings in the area. Now, there's no rail station close to Warrawong, well, unless you go into Port Kembla or if you go into Wollongong itself. And it's part of this rather uncomfortable story. There's an area called Shell Harbour, which is further south. And what happened was that because the prices of property in and around Wollongong itself started to rise, people were being priced out, and so they went further out. And if you now go down to Shell Harbour, and they've actually been put a couple of new stations in down that area too, what you've got is massively constrained construction, including quite a lot of small standalone properties, but with very small plots. And the quality of life is pretty bad. Now, this interesting this Warrawong picture here is actually an artist's impression, and of course it's all covered in green and looking lovely, and there's no traffic. And well, I can tell you that the high street down through Warrawong is always very very busy even now. So there's a bit of a problem there, the theory and the practice. But I have to say also, Edwin, that how are they going to build this stuff? They haven't got the construction capacity to build it, right? And I'm sort of weighing up. Okay, on the demand side, sure, we've got migration, which is still high. Oh, it's come down a little bit, but it's still very high. We've got a lot of people sitting on equity and thinking about buying more expensive property because of the fact that home prices have gone up over the last few years, and they're sitting pretty. And a lot of that is paper profit until you actually move, and then of course you've also got aspirational aspect, and the family, I need a bigger house, says that, says the housewife, right? Oh, I need it. So there is quite a lot of demand, and the banks, of course, are very happy to lend more, because frankly they make all of their money pretty much now from the mortgage sector. And I find it quite interesting that when you talk to people who are actually under quite constrained incomes, the banks seem to have the capacity to overlook a lot of stuff and just offer them really big loans. And so this debt to income ratio, 50 to 60% of income going on the property, it's nuts. By the way, on that, it's worth just noting that the APRA, which of course APRA sets the regulations, APRA was giving evidence last week. And John Lonsdale, who's the head of APRA, made the point that the pressure on households because of the nature of the big loans is a problem, and that we're very indebted. The debt to ratio is 190, remains high. They also said that whilst they might provide some different guidance on HELP loans, that's the Higher Education Loan Programme debts, the broader issue of student loans, they will still have to be counted. So that was quite interesting. And in fact, they're going to issue some new guidance on that. And interestingly, the ASIC head also spoke about retail investors piling into unlisted speculative property plays or buying risky crypto products. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. So that's the one side. And I do think I always come back to lending, and the capacity to get the loan is a critical issue creating demand. But on the supply side, we've got little construction, got very high costs. And there was an interesting article the other day highlighting the fact that even now, with everything that's going on, we are continuing to see more construction firms falling over. And the nature of that construction is now quite different, and the failures are quite different insofar that, this is a McGrath-Nicol report that said that firms that they're seeing falling over are shifting. So there were some specific problems, but now we're looking at more substantive structural issues and broken business models. And that's the point. So in the heart of the construction industry, we've got broken business models. It's also overregulated. We've spoken before about the amount of fees and charges required to be able to go through the planning processes. And there's a lot of red tape. And then what about infrastructure? We're not building any infrastructure. And that was another thing that came out. There was a report that came out quite recently saying that we've missed out on a whole generation of infrastructure that normally we'd be putting in. So whilst the public sector is building a lot of stuff, we're not putting the infrastructure in place. And I suppose you could always argue that you've got to still got to go into the centre of Sydney, for example, to do a lot of stuff because there's no alternative for out in those bigger regions. So it's a mess.
Yeah, look, and these are the headwinds. These are the headwind forces that that are going against first home buyers or home buyers, whether they're trying to get into the second home or whatever in and around the area that they grew up with in or the desired area, or because of the children where they want to study and so forth. And they're real headwinds. They're real headwinds that are pushing against the local buyers. Like you said, the current immigration policy is one of the major ones. The local people trading is going to is those that have got a lot of equity, a lot of they've owned the homes for 30, 40, 50 years, and they're downsizing. Well, they're always going to outbid you for a villa or a smaller freestanding home in your local area, because they can. And this is why I say, rising tides lift all boats, and this is where you've got this huge shift in pricing as well. So you've got that middle range, let's say your small 3-bedroom home or villa, are pumped up because you've got the higher range, your 4 or 5-bedroom homes with swimming pools on 750 square meters are just being, you've got two folks living in there, and they want to downsize. Well, then, it's going to push those prices up somewhat as well, because others that want to upsize. You've got families that are pooling a lot of money together in terms of, and I'm not talking about just one or two family members, Martin. I'm talking about 3 generations of families, grandma, be it with grandpa or mum and dad, and then there's the kids. And there's 4 pensions coming in, and also the 2 professionals or 3, whatever it is. I mean, this is what's happening now. When you also look at your demographic changes, the huge demographic changes that we're seeing across Sydney, and the families that are buying, and the families that are coming over with a lot of money. These are families that they're not shy of living together until such time that they part, that they go their separate pathways after they build enough equity in the dwelling to then, buy another property, however their arrangement is, whether it's a verbal arrangement and a family agreement, whether it be under a trust or whatever it is. These are groups of people that are pulling monies together to, I mean, we know that the Wheatsharp Chatters have been doing this, but now you've got another group, another contingency, which is your Silent Tigers, and also to an extent your nucleus on the block, the Vietnamese community, which are also they've lived with this for decades. So they live with this back under these environments back home. So this is nothing new to them. So this is how they can, and therefore they are upsizing to bigger homes in order to cater for extended families. But then also, Martin, as you said, apart from the trading of properties, you've also got people that have made a lot of money, have been making a lot of money over the last few months, in your crypto environment and in your Bitcoin environment. They made a lot of money, and now, right behind the Kryptonians and the Bitcoinians, as I call them, you've got the desperate housewives that are saying, "Hey, I can't live in your brick in your cold wallet any longer. I want to live in a house." And they're coming in. There have been some phenomenal results in around the eastern suburbs, in some parts of the eastern suburbs, where you can see young people that you can almost tell when somebody's made a big in the trading environment, and then it's just shuffling money from the gains that they've had in the trading environment to buying a home, and they will battle it out, particularly if the one of the family members is so desires it, and this is where they want to be. So these are the headwinds, apart from the others that you've mentioned, of course, and with the little construction issues around construction, no real infrastructure. But the one that gets me, Martin, is the fact that and what you mentioned is all these announceables that government bodies, state, federal, keep on making, but they don't deliver. And then there was a word that back in the days where it was called decentralization, and that's gone out the door. And we were speaking about it from late 2019, when we did that show, All Roads Lead to Sydney. And again, here we are. Here we are. We've got no infrastructure. We've got vast expanse of vacant land, but they still haven't got the earthworks. They still haven't got the civil works into parts and around Badgerys Creek, where there are people that have been sitting there on promises that all the civil works were going to be put in place, so that the 5-acre lots can be subdivided and be sold off as housing for those that are in need, and it'll be cheaper housing. But they still they've been the councils, the government made these promises for the last 15 years, and they're still waiting for it. Back in the day when I had the office in Parramatta, they did this hoorah transition, or wanting to transition the law courts from the city to Parramatta. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars in revamping the law courts there around the family law court area and the buildings around there for. But the judges didn't want to come over. So then, hey, they were left empty, and everybody still travels into the city to hear major cases. Not only that, but the classic, the biggest, poke in the eye for the Parramatta community was the fact that when CBA picked up stumps and went back into Redmond to a purpose-built facility. So much for decentralization. And I mean, they're just a couple of the ones that come to mind. I mean, there's a lot of others. Yes, you can bring the what is it, the that museum that's named Parramatta, can't remember the
Powerhouse.
name of the Powerhouse Museum, but yeah, it's only going to get flooded anyway. So next time Parramatta River flows. So I mean, but what does that do? How many jobs does that bring to the area? When and back then, when all this was happening and when all this was now, so, I mean, Parramatta was buzzing. And now you go to Parramatta, you walk through the streets of Parramatta, and it's dead as a doornail. You almost feel a little bit scared. I reminisce the days when I used to walk around the streets of Blacktown Station. It's scary. It's sort of reminiscent of that. You gotta sort of look around, look behind you, look where you're walking. But they're the headwinds. But now, obviously, now we've got a greater headwind that's around the corner, and that is, if you recall, when we spoke about the green the green mortgages, Martin, do you recall that? Well, they're in. It's in, and it's 2025 is going to get very, very interesting, because when banks start rolling out fully rolling out the green loans, or I call it the green loans, when, in other words, banks are going to require an efficiency certificate to provide a loan. In other words, they're going to give your property that you've got for sale, they're going to give it a rating of 1 to 10 as to a star rating, call it a star rating for homes, for home efficiency. And if it, depending on the rating, will determine how much you're going to be paying back by way of interest, or whether or not the bank's even going to lend you. Because if it's on a low rating scale, you're going to be they're going to make the assessment that, let's say, for example, it's let's say the average $1.3 million home that you're looking at buying, and it comes with a low rating, with a deficiency certificate. Well, the bank's going to say, well, in order to get it up to the efficiency level that is of our standard, potentially you're going to be spending $200,000 to $300,000 to renovate the property, and therefore they'll make the assessments of whether or not you can borrow that money before you even get the loan. The question is, Martin, is this going to bring the values of properties down, or is it going to increase the values of existing property, moving forward once this is really implemented across the board? So, because in essence, what they're looking at doing is they're looking at every home, every property that's for sale will have to have an efficiency certificate to go along with it.
Yes, and of course that'll be somebody having to pay for that. And scheme, of course, is a scorecard. It's government backed. It's a star rating, a bit like the washing machine star rating. You know, energy efficiency for your washing machine or your use of water, etc. And it's all about energy costs and emission reduction and making your home more comfortable. Now, I must say that I'm a great believer in good efficiency, particularly insulation. So, we had a roof replaced quite recently here. And the difference with what we had previously is remarkable. So, I've been monitoring quite carefully the amount of energy used since we had extra insulation put in the roof space. And it's remarkable. So good insulation is good sense because it actually is cheaper to run and it makes it more comfortable. But if you actually end up with the property essentially being linked to a particular standard that's requiring people to do quite a lot of extra work, whether it's renovation work or something more serious, that's going to actually put extra pressure on some properties versus others. And if the banks effectively are saying, I will lend you a bigger amount because of your star rating, that's also an extra complexity too. So I'm not sure this has been very, very thought through. And I suppose the banks will say, well, see, we're doing our bit towards the green efficiency drive, but the consequences could be quite interesting, quite serious. And in fact, I was talking to someone the other day who had a property. And it didn't have an energy certificate or anything, but I think they got a survey done. And the survey basically said that this property was very poorly built. There were lots of gaps. There was very little insulation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I had quite a long conversation with this particular prospective purchaser of this property as to whether it was actually still worth considering. Because of the fact that if you made the investment to be able to actually insulate it properly, and it's a question of can you do that? Can you retrofit insulation to an adequate standard? What is the cost of doing that, and what are the benefits of doing it? Ultimately, they walked away. They said, "No, it's just too complicated." So it could well be that if you actually have a property that isn't up to scratch, then you might find it more difficult to move it on if you need to move it on, or have to discount it quite considerably to move it on. So I think this is another factor that people haven't yet really thought through.
It's going to be very, very interesting. I mean, I know there's going to be the knee-jerk reaction when it becomes public knowledge, when you see the mainstream media talking about it, and some properties will be undersold for that reason. But I think in the long term, what's going to happen in my thoughts are that you're going to get a lot of people withdrawing from market because they're not going to achieve the price that they believe that they will get, and they'll wait until they do rectification work. A lot of it has to do with glazing. A lot of it has to do with glazing, windows and insulation. It's not a cheap not a cheap thing to fix, particularly glazing, and as you said, also insulation. I just had a four bedroom modest home, insulated walls, 4.1 R rated bats on the in the ceiling, and 2.6 2.5 in the walls. I just had it insulated for, I think from memory, just under 3,000, just a little bit over $3,000. But if I was to try and get that done for for one of our clients, you pay that and more just to insulate the ceiling. Take away the old insulation, put new insulation in, because it's a different game. It's a different application. Whereas when you've got a house to the bare bones, in other words, when it's all being all the gyprock's being taken out and the interior's being remodeled, I mean, it's easy. To go, you can. The boys were in and out, within 4 hours. It's it was it's amazing just watching them operate. So, to this energy efficiency rating is going to is basically a push for newer for people to go to newer homes, but yet not realizing that from now, the cost under the new. The NCC, the National Construction Code. Obviously, we said that when that came in last year, early last year, and we spoke about it, we said that that was going to increase the cost of construction, and it has. Back then, we said that it was, we're looking at potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars per new dwelling, and in some cases, it has. But on average, you could say, the increasing cost to build under the new code and under the new BASICs and everything else that goes with it, it's the cost has been on average about 12 to 13%, but it's still a big cost. right? That's not including the value of the land. It just includes, the cost of construction. When they've looked at this, when they've looked at this model, what does that equate to numbers? Well, on an average home in New South Wales, that would, building in Sydney, that equates to around, $70,000, $80,000, on an average dwelling, which is, some would say, well, you could absorb that, but when it's an existing dwelling, as you said, Martin, it's a lot harder. So that extra cost that triples, if not quadruples, in order to get it to higher efficiency. So this is, and this is one that demands greater thought as to see what will happen, moving forward. And people that want to that want to transact, is it going to stop, people trans are people are going to are they well, obviously you're not going to people that want to buy and want to borrow, the bank's going to demand that they borrow a lot more, whether or not, if it's a desired area, if it's a desired dwelling, if it's a desired, people will stretch themselves, right? So in the in I guess if but for the headwinds that we're facing, or young, people are facing by to buy into the market, if they weren't there, more to the point, if the demand created by immigration wasn't there, I think that this would be disastrous for the home market. But for the fact that we have those at play, and when this is coming in, I think it may be a small jolt, but it's not going to be enough to pull the market back significantly. And the other thing is all we need is a small fraction of retraction in for sale numbers. And again, we've got a we go back to the game. Little supply, high demand, inflated demand, and many reasons why supplies are there. And we continue the ball game.
Absolutely. Well, I think there's quite a lot of evidence to suggest that that's going to happen in some areas, not all areas, but in some areas. But I just want to say two points before we close out this conversation. One is, we've always said if you are going to buy a property, it's worth making sure that you do get a survey done so you understand the current state of the property. And in fact, it is possible to make sure that the report includes some assessments of the current levels of insulation. Now, in some cases, of course, that's difficult because it's all covered up. But nevertheless, there are things that can be done, including infrared tests and what have you. So that's quite worthwhile. The second is that, of course, if you think about retrofitting more insulation, you can save money later. And that's a calculation. If you're going to stay in the same house for a long period of time, then it perhaps makes a lot of sense. If you're only going to be there for a year or so, maybe less sense. But it's just worth doing the numbers. But thirdly, and this is my own experience, if you do actually invest in good insulation, the savings that you can make for your energy bills is quite remarkable, really, because you can keep the hot air out and you can keep the warm air in cold times. And on an ongoing recurring basis, it can be quite an effective way to reduce your running costs. So it's worth thinking about. But we should move on briefly now to talk about the listings. And as you say, what is going to happen? Well, interestingly, of course, if we look at Sydney, this is on the domain numbers for Sydney, 19,478 on the 24th. And if we go forward to the 3rd, there was 19,774. So small rise. And you can see that there in the tracking chart that you've got. As typically happens, not a run-up as fast, but still a bit above where we were last year. And I think we're going to see a little bit of uncertainty now with the election and with everything else that's going on. So my expectation is we're going to see listings in this particular area probably hang around the same sort of area. bit more demand possibly will take some property off. But my point with this, Edwin, is that there's a big difference between new property coming on that's really good property and getting snapped up, and a lot of stuff that's hanging around. And the stuff that's hanging around is the thing I'm quite interested in, because I look at the numbers. There is a greater proportion now of properties that have been on listing for quite a long period of time. And they're either mispriced, they're too expensive, or they've got some fundamental defects. So it is interesting to look at also the sequence of what's coming on and what's going off.
Yeah, and this is a very important point that you raised there, Martin, because if it's not if, but when the new home score card system comes into play with the efficiency rating and the bank, you've got to also consider what you buy now, and if you're going to be selling in 3 years, 5 years down the track, how that's going to affect your potential sale price as well. How much more are you going to spend? We know for a fact that if you trust and believe in those before you bid and before you buy reports, I mean, you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble if you don't do your own independent report. And this is where you've got to say to your inspector, you've got to say, I want to know what type of insulation is in there. I tell our guys, I need to know because you've got the cellulose fiber stuff. It's similar to your Mr. Fluffy type of stuff, but it's not the asbestos, but nonetheless, it's still very caustic and still very, in my opinion, very harmful to the people that live in the homes with the cellulose fiber that got pumped into homes all over Sydney. In the 90s, in the early 90s, it's mashed, paper mache just pumped into the ceilings with carcinogenics, fire retardants, and all sorts of chemicals for to for to repel insects, and that's what's sitting up there. So, but I always say I want to know whether there's sarking under the tiles, whether there's what type of insulation it has, and then we do, if we need to go further, we do our own digging around and do a little bit of intrusive investigative work when you're seeking permission from the agent to get samples from different parts of the house. And that's what you got to do, and that is what you're able to do, and that's what you should be doing when you get your independent building and pest report when you're buying a property. Because although we've been saying that it's costing people a hell of a lot of money, after what I've been reading today, and what we've discussed on the show today, I'm more than ever convinced that people are going to be absolutely devastated. When and if they have to, then not only did they spend 200,000, 150,000, 200,000 just to get rectification work done. I'm not talking renovation work. To fix the so-called renovation that somebody else did, and but now the rating is going to be depleted because that they've got old glazing. They've got bugger all insulation, and the rating doesn't stack up, and therefore people that want to buy can't get a loan because the bank won't lend it to them because of the low rating. So it's going to be damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of scenario. But you won't be damned if you get the right building inspector to check out the property.
Yeah, very good point, everyone. And just on that, I will make another point too. The other thing to bear in mind, of course, is if you do put more insulation in and get rid of drafts and things, you've got to think about mold and mold prevention as well, because it's very important to make sure that there's adequate air recirculation in and out of the property as well. And in the UK, they had a major insulation program, government backed and sponsored, some years ago. And it's now proved that they've actually created a massive problem with mold and with no air circulation in properties. And people living now in areas of the country in properties that have been so-called fixed up with actually now breathing problems because of the mold. So it's important to make sure that when you actually are thinking about this sort of thing, you're getting the right advice And you are, of course, taking account of air circulation as well. So you can't just turn off all the you need some air, or you need a heat exchanger, or you need a mechanism to be able to swap, air in and out of the place. And that's a very important element. Just come back to the price moves, and you've actually supplied us with a little bit of information about what's been going on the property listings in the Sydney suburbs, and you've highlighted Penrith and Springwood and Panier as a couple of interesting areas.
What we're tracking is to see what freestanding homes are doing in the most part, but in general terms, what how the numbers are shifting around these suburbs around Sydney. Freestanding homes slowly coming down across the board, but Penrith, there's been a big shift in the surrounding area because more than 15% from last week's numbers got absorbed, so that caught my attention, as well as any type of property. So that would be your townhouse, villas, apartments. There was a lot of sales around that as well. In Springwood, it almost seems like whatever gets put up in Springwood in terms of for sale listings and some of the surrounding areas around Springwood, because there's still, the lower mountains, so you're still, relatively, I mean, not that close, but still a lot closer than the mid-mountains and Katoomba to track into the city. So it's very high demand there. Agents there are very excited as to how the sales are progressing there. In Panania, Panania is becoming a duplex town, similar to what we saw happening in some parts of the Shire, and also over in Dundas Valley. The whole of Panania is having a huge transformation. There's some big big blocks of land. Yeah, properties that are sitting on 700, 680, 700 square meters, and they're being converted into duplexes. But the duplexes aren't small like the ones that they've been they're built either in the Shire or in the around Dundas Valley. These are big, big monstrous looking duplexes. So it's had an uplifting numbers around there in terms of for sale. But a lot of them are newly completed duplexes, and it's an area that's really transforming and changing rapidly.
Very interesting, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this with different parts of the outer suburban areas, particularly changing character very quickly. Obviously, the planning rules and regulations and everything else are driving that. If we then just down to Melbourne and look at the numbers on market at the moment, on 24th, 28,273 listed, jumped forward a week, 28,297. So little movement. And then in Brisbane on the 24th, 3,918 compared with 3,938. So a small rise, but not dramatic. And if we look at the auctions, you can see there that the auction markets are pretty warm at the moment, as you perhaps might expect. I guess that we're coming towards the fag end of the season. But interesting to see. I still am getting quite a lot of reports, Edwin, that agents are recommending auctions as the way to go, almost every type of property. And I've always said, no, you've got to pick your property type. Not all properties should be taken to auction. It depends on what your property is and where it is and what you're trying to achieve. But of course, the auctioneers and the agents like auctions because they make more money off the back of the extra marketing fees. And just looking at the trends here on the comparisons, you can see here that things are they're cooling a little, I think.
Yeah, they're still lower numbers than last year, but when you look at the percentages, and this is why I like to look at numbers as well, as everybody seems to bang on percentages, but if you compare last year's numbers, they were a lot stronger than this year's numbers. So it just shows you that the confidence level in from vendor side of things, although agents push for auctions, is not that high. Because let's face it, vendors are asking for a lot more, and they expect a lot more. But I think in a lot of cases, in a lot of instances, vendors, rightly so, they're warming up, they're waking up to the fact that to achieve the higher prices for the homes and achieve those higher values that the agents promise them, auction's not necessarily the way to go because it's not the for various reasons and more to the point because agents that go that down that path don't really want to work the listing, as I say.
Yeah, very, very true. Let's look at the rentals briefly. So in the Sydney region on the 24th, 10,741. Jump forward to the third, and there we've got 10,292, so a little easing. And in Melbourne, 24th, 11,143 compared with 10,788. So as expected at this time of year, we are seeing now the listings available dropping. More people are coming, getting into the rental sector. New students coming into the country have been here now. We're seeing some change as well. People moving out from rentals they can't afford anymore to cheaper rentals further away. All those things are happening. But overall, the rental story is not flash. And I know that everyone's saying, oh, well, the growth in rentals is easing. But there's still a significant rise in the average rent that's being charged. And we're still getting stories of people being charged a significant uplift compared with last year on existing rents. And that process is still continuing. So I'm not as convinced as some that we've seen the end of the rental crisis. Well, we're coming towards the end of the show, Edwin. Before we close, though, you've just got one other thought.
Yeah, look, I guess the thought is money is not the wealth of the future. Our health is. And sometimes it takes, I got hit with a sledgehammer over the weekend. But for the my continuous drinks that I've as I said, the turmeric, the ginger teas. And everything else. Look, but I guess I can honestly say that the reason why I got hit with a sledgehammer and I was down for 2 days was because I was just got very little sleep, doing driving around a lot, doing long hours, and then we got that crazy weather pattern last week and the week before. Yeah, it was hot and muggy, then cold, hot, muggy, cold, and everything. And so, the I'm I don't sleep well in the heat, and I don't like to run the air conditioning on all night. So it was just one of those things. So yeah, I felt it. But look, I'm saying, it's just a reminder that. The currency or the wealth of our future is our health. So yeah, we need to look after ourselves more. And as we endeavor to do, there are going to be occasions where we're going to slip up, but we just got to keep on taking care of our bodies because it's the other thing is, Martin, it's not cheap. Getting old, and it's not cheap getting having to go through health issues. It's not getting any cheaper, it's only getting more expensive.
Yeah, well, health is wealth, Edwin. Health is wealth. And, having been through some personal experiences with my wife and, seeing the degrade that happened when she got ill, it really just brings it home that actually it's important to take the right steps as far as you can to try and maintain your health, good exercise, sleep, eat the right things, et cetera, keep the weight down. These are important, and for two reasons. One is, of course, that people actually feel better when they're healthy. But the other is, you say, the costs of actually trying to put it right when things go wrong. Medical costs have gone absolutely through the roof, and even getting access to treatment is a problem in some areas as well. So this is a very important word of advice. Well, I'm glad to see that you've been back and you've made it through the show. So congratulations on that. I'll look forward to picking up again with you next Monday on our normal rant day, and. Get better. Keep taking the tablets, or keep taking the drinks, and I'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Likewise, Martin. You take care.
Take care. Cheers. Bye bye.